Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Alrighty, hour number two on this Monday. What's happening, Tinky and Tierney, coast to coast around the country. Hope all is well as we continue from our Rocket Mortgage studio. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Rocket can. Hopefully everybody had a great weekend. Mixing in the baseball, mixing in the college, mixing in the pro. And, you know, there was obviously a lot to choose from. That continues tonight. Two football games, which, I mean, who's going to actually contest that? The answer is nobody. We've got the World Series begins tomorrow. Congrats to the Dodgers. You know, they overcame a sick deficit. Didn't necessarily see it coming just because the way the Braves looked and what the Braves had done on the hill for so long throughout this entire postseason. But, you know, it's funny because I know we're going to do college football here. But, you know, you were talking about Tiki was all into the game last night. Obviously, I was too. But you were pumped up. And you neglect, as much as you brought a lot of things to the table, you neglect that base running gaff. Tiki, that is something. Remember who do we had on Ryan Roland Smith the other day, right?
Yep.
Part of the Seattle broadcast team, former pitcher. And he mentioned the you know, the acronym PFP.
Yep.
And PFP is pitcher's fielding practice. You know, a couple of two hop back to the mound, you flip it to first base, ground ball to first base, you jog over, you cover it, you get the corner of the bag, blah, blah, blah. You go bunt, throw to second, work the diamond. The next thing you do, and you just do it in relative obscurity, there's no limelight, the sun's blistering and beating you to a bloody pulp when you're doing this, is run the bases. Situational stuff. And when you have second and third in a playoff game, and you're on third base, and there's a bullet one hopper hit to the third baseman, you got to freeze. Yeah. Under no circumstance can you go. And then if you make that gaffe, then at least the guy on second's got to commit quickly to get to third. What a mess that was.
Yeah,
that double
right.
play was crazy.
Yeah, double play. This was the Atlanta Braves. I forget who the runner was on third. Is it Swanson? Dansby Swanson, who hit a home run earlier in the game. He's been so good for the Braves this whole postseason. But he took off immediately to home. And it hit perfectly on the mound, so it bounced directly to the second baseman, and he was in no man's land. And then worse, the runner on second decided to try, and you should have just went all the way to third. Go all the way to third. Stop like hanging in no man's land just because Dansby Swanson's in no man's land. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, they both ended up in no man's land, and you get a double play on what should have at least been, you know, an advancer to a runner to third and maybe an out at home.
Okay, so that's we'll get a little break from the baseball. Nothing today. Tomorrow, game one. So Teak was down for the Georgia-Bama game. First, give me the vibe. How was it?
It was great, man. Now there was only 19,000 fans in attendance, but it was the atmosphere was still great. They have the music. The stadium is so state of the art, you know, because it's brand. There's so much money in the SEC in Alabama in particular. They have the lights glowing. They turn up for what, you know, all this stuff. The music pop, blaring. So the atmosphere was good, even though it wasn't a full stadium. But they were perfectly socially distanced. I got to give them credit, the fans. Now, to the game, this was what we had been waiting for all season long, because Alabama has just – they've always been dominant. And every year we look for an SEC team to challenge them. Last year, obviously, it was LSU, and LSU beat them and ultimately won the national championship. And to a great extent, a great expectation, people thought Georgia was going to be that team this year. – primarily because their defense is so stout, BT. I mean, they're number two in the nation, or they were number two in the nation in yards, number five in scoring defense. They shut out basically from a touchdown. They shut other than two field goals. They stopped Auburn, but Auburn proving maybe to be a little bit of a fraud this year. And Gus Malzahn is under fire because they lost to South Carolina this past weekend. Auburn did. But Georgia had all the goods, and they had a quarterback that you which wanted to root for, and this kid Stetson Bennett. And for the first half of this game, it was exactly what we would have wanted. 24-20 in favor of Georgia. Alabama's losing at home, and you just felt like, man, an upset. There's an upset coming, man. You can just feel it. And then Stetson Bennett, who we like because his story is great, but he's not a pro, and he's 5'11". 195 pounds, former walk-on, who wins with, you know, not making mistakes and doing things the right way. He tried to start doing too much. And once he started turning the football over, as he did in the second half, he had two interceptions. It was Katie bar the door. Alabama has three of the fastest and most dynamic wide receivers in college football. And Mac Jones, who people just thought was going to be a filler, Tua Tagovailoa, obviously Jalen Hurts, who we talked about, and Tua Tagovailoa, who won national championship. And, you know, Mac Jones is sitting in here. There's this kid from California, Bryce Young, who's going to be a superstar in a year. Let's just see if we can manage with Mac Jones for a season. Mac Jones might be the favorite behind Tua. He might be second on the list behind Trevor Lawrence for the Heisman Trophy right now.
No, he is. I checked. He is.
He's thrown for 400 yards three times, BT. 417 he threw against Georgia, 417 last weekend, and 435 the weekend before that. The kid can ball. Yeah. And again, he can ball because teams decide they want to play man-to-man, and they can't cover these wide receivers. And so Alabama exercised themselves and put up, you know, 560-something yards against one of the best defenses in college football. They looked unstoppable because they looked vulnerable until they weren't.
Well, that's why, you know, and unless I knew the stats, but it was too early in the season. You know, you got to be careful. And I know they've got pros, too. So that's obviously part of the response to Georgia's defense before this game. I understand that.
Yep.
And high-level pros, not just a couple of kids who go in the third round. They got a few guys who are going to go very early. You know, but you just said it. 600 yards, 33. I don't know if you said 33 first downs.
Yep. It was stealing, man, especially in the second half. And then they shut them out in the second half.
They didn't score a point. It was 21 unanswered points here. Yep. So what started as something that was – all right, if you're not watching this, text your buddy. Yo, you see what's going on CBS? You might want to tune into this if your Saturday afternoon with the kids has kind of bled into the early evening and you're not really tuned into this game. You better get tuned in. And then when you tuned in, you're like, I missed all the good stuff. This game was not. It also depends how you look at it. Some people, and I'm talking about non-Bama, non-Georgia fans, everybody else that just tunes in to watch two of the best teams in the country play football and make, you know, judgments off of that pertaining to the rest of the weekend. We'll get into UNC in a moment, losing to Florida State, what that means. Notre Dame didn't look good at all. They barely beat Louisville, who's not good. But if you just tuned in to watch the game, maybe you actually did derive great enjoyment from watching Bama flex because you're like, hey, this is Bama. Nick's back. They did this offensively, and they just you know, eviscerated one of the best defenses in the country. Or you were looking for a tight game, and you had it, and then it was shut. You know, then it changed. Or you were looking for an upset, and you thought you had it, and then it went back the other way. So, I am disappointed, especially watching the first part, that this is the way it went down. I have great appreciation for the myriad weapons that Bama trots out there. Mm-hmm. But to sit here and say that after the way it started versus the way it finished, I was hoping for a little more theater in that fourth quarter. It was done.
Yeah. After the third quarter, it felt like the game was out of hand because Georgia's not built to play from behind. They're old school. They want to run the football. They want to you know, play great defense, force you into difficult, you know, down and distances and make you make mistakes. And you can't do that against Alabama. Well, they did for a half, but it's really hard to sustain it for a whole game because eventually they figure you out. Now, the interesting thing here, BT, is Steve Sarkisian, who's their offensive coordinator, he's the guy who figured it out. And we saw this explosion happen in the second half for Alabama's offense. Not that they didn't have a good first half, but they really exploded. in the second half. Steve Sarkisian was supposed to also be the head coach. So we get down to Alabama, and this is all anybody is talking about. You listen to the sports radio on the, you know, as you're hanging around doing whatever, all they're talking about is, man, Nick Saban's not going to be there. They're putting out memes that the mascot, like, if you see the mascot on the sideline calling plays, you know, sure, don't question it. Right? Yeah. They had what did they call Luke? They had a meme with Luke Saban, which was Nick Saban with a fake mustache on. Luke Saban has been promoted, you know, from ball boy to assistant coach. You know, so don't be surprised if you see him on the sideline. Yep. Like all these memes, like Nick Saban, yeah, he's going to be around. Just wait. Well, guess what? Come game time, Nick Saban's on the sideline.
Well, we knew that earlier in the day. It wasn't like it was a surprise. I knew this. I'm sitting in my office Saturday. I'm like, he's coaching tonight.
Of course, everybody knew he was going to find a way to coach. And it turned out because, and I only bring this up because we did a game earlier this year, Florida State versus Miami. And I told you about this. Mike Norvell, their head coach, tested positive for the coronavirus a week ahead of the game. Now, we had no idea that there was the option if you go test again, and if you're negative for three straight tests, not within 24 hours of each one, that you're cleared and you can go back and be on the sideline. With Mike Norvell, the conversation was, you tested positive, you got to go quarantine for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. right? Don't even, you can talk to your team through Zoom and everything else and have a connection to the speaker on the practice field from your living room, but you're not coaching, right? Until you, for 2 weeks, you're quarantining. In Alabama, they didn't go for that one. They made the assumption that it was a false positive, which ultimately it turned out to be, because Nick Saban, according to Eli Gold, who is the longtime and storied play-by-play announcer for Alabama football, told me right before the game, he's like, Saban got tested about five times just to make sure that this was a false positive. And it was. And he was on the sideline. Not that I don't know if it would have made a difference or not, but the whole hype leading up to the game was, yep, how's Alabama going to play without Nick? Exactly. How's Alabama going to play without Nick Saban? Well, we should have known they weren't going to play without Nick Saban.
I hear you. Good for Nick. Good to see that he's healthy. And Alabama flexed when they had a flex here. Notre Dame couldn't flex. They could not pull away. Ugly win against Louisville, who mm-hmm. is, you know, to say that Louisville right now is an average team is probably a lot more than they deserve. They're, you know, I mean, they're not very good.
Yep.
So, you know, I look at Notre Dame and, you know, week one they played Duke, relatively pedestrian team. They couldn't pull away from them. You know, we're seeing some signs here. I know that we keep circling, oh, Notre Dame, Clemson, Notre Dame, Clemson, mm-hmm. Notre Dame, Clemson. Well, you know, Notre Dame, not every week, because they won one game 52-0, I think it was, against USF. I think that was the second game that they played, 52 or 56 nothing.
Yeah.
But the Irish are showing us some signs here that we might need to, we need to dial down the enthusiasm. Because if I'm making the call for this, I mean, I got Clemson favored by 13.5, 14 points.
No,
right now
I would as well. Now, I think what we're finding out is that it's despite Notre Dame being in the ACC for this year, they can win the ACC championship if they finish in the top two and end up having to play Clemson. But I don't see that being a factor. It looks to me like this season is going to be Clemson and everybody else in the ACC. Yesterday it was, I mean, that was embarrassing. It was 70-7. It started out, it was 7-7. You're like, oh, well, guys, this is interesting. And then they scored 63 unanswered points. And it was like, they weren't even trying.
Yeah.
And I mean, the larger conversation is, you know, we just finished talking about Georgia and Alabama, and Alabama is one of the best teams in football. In fact, offensively, they are the best team in football statistically and points. However, they have challenges every week, right? Even Ole Miss scored points on them with Lane Kiffin, and Georgia had the lead at halftime. When they play Auburn in the Iron Bowl, yes, I know Auburn is playing, you know, subpar football for their expectation, and Bo Nix is making some mistakes at quarterback for them, and Gus Malzahn is on the hot seat like you wouldn't believe. That's still going to be a tight game just because it's a rivalry game. Clemson doesn't have a natural rival right now in the ACC, and they're going to run through the conference in the conference championship game. And so, not that it's unfair, because it just is who it is. It's just who you play. You give Dabo Swinney a ton of credit for how he's recruited and the superstar talent that he's gotten, but You can pencil them in as number one in the college football playoff right now, because nobody's challenging them in the ACC. Because we mentioned Notre Dame, the other team that had a potential to do some damage was Mac Brown's UNC Tar Heels.
Hold on, T. Before you get to Tar Heels for a minute, because I know you've called a few of their games, I just want to insert this about the Irish real quick. If it's snowing or if it's raining sideways the entire game, okay, you have to process it a little bit differently. The Notre Dame had 6 points with 3.5 minutes to go in the third quarter at home.
Yeah, I know.
And they were losing, which 6 points.
Yeah, no.
Unacceptable.
Look, I like Notre Dame. I can maybe excuse them a little bit, BT.
Why?
Because they had
of the tests?
Yeah, they had so many guys.
But you know what? After a while, you're a little rough. Come on, talent's supposed to prevail at this level.
But here's the thing. Notre Dame is not like a lot of these other schools, like Alabama or Clemson or even Georgia, because Georgia's had, you know, four in a row, maybe three in a row, top recruiting classes, like top five recruiting classes, maybe even like the top three recruiting classes. Notre Dame doesn't necessarily get these elite recruits. So when you lose one or two or 5 to 10 guys because of the coronavirus, you're playing guys that maybe walked on, you know what I mean? And cleared the clearinghouse to be on campus there, on grounds there. And so the only excuse I can make is that they were very disrupted and they're not three deep, at every position. Whereas Alabama, if Najee Harris, their running back, goes down, Brian Robinson Jr., he's just as good. You know what I mean?
It just is
what it is.
I just can't take him that serious. I cannot give Notre
Dame
the kind of
respect. That's the reason why.
I just can't give it to him right now.
That's the reason why you shouldn't take them that serious, BT, because unless the conditions are ideal, they're not really a threat. You know what I mean? Especially in the ACC to Clemson. And I was saying, the other team that we thought was going to be a threat was UNC. Now, I saw UNC early against Syracuse, and I chalked that slow start. You know, they looked lethargic, maybe because there was no fans there. They had lots of hype coming in the season with Sam Howell, who had 38 touchdown passes last year, was ACC Freshman of the Year, was All-American, all these things. Mac Brown has done a great job of, like, reinvigorating that program. But to lose to Virginia Tech, who for the fourth game in a row, BT, is missing like 20 guys. You know,
they have their star cornerback playing? Who's going to get drafted in the first round?
No, he's not there.
He opted out. Well, no, wait.
Caleb Farley.
That's right.
Caleb Farley. Yes, he opted out.
He opted out early, actually.
He was the first one.
Yeah, he was.
So you got some of these guys that opted out. And because of the coronavirus, they're missing like 15 to 20 guys every week. And to lose to them the way that they did. Now, Hendon Hooker is a really good dual-purpose quarterback for Virginia Tech, and he just got his first start this week. So maybe that was the difference, and Carolina wasn't prepared for him. But they had no business losing to Virginia Tech if they were a top-five team. Mm-hmm. They lost to Virginia. Nobody's challenging Clemson in the ACC.
That's the bottom line.
That's right.
We could go in circles for 3 more minutes. We don't need to. Just watch Notre Dame play. You don't see it. Watch Carolina play. You don't see it as much as you need to see it. So props to Bama for getting through a rough week with, you know, a lot of Zooms with Saban not there. Props for Georgia for being ready to play that game. And then, you know, better team with more talent pulled away and flexed. And an interesting weekend in college football for sure. All right, coming up, we mentioned some of the components to last night's game, the base running gaffe, and obviously Bellinger's blast in the seventh and coming back from 3-1 deficit. But what, at least get this angle in? Less about the mechanics of the game, more so about big picture, like from an emotional point of view. How disappointed are we that the Astros, no disrespect to the Rays, that the Astros aren't there to take a beating, to take a losing, you know, on the national stage, the biggest stage, the World Series? Come on, we're all kind of rooting for the Astros to get there and then to implode. Maybe have Altuve throw a few in the stands over the first baseman's head like Nobby did back in the day. Not going to happen. They're home. And we'll talk about that. The matchup, that's next. Tiki and Tierney.
All righty. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here is 1-855-212-4227 on Tiki and Tierney. Brought to you by GEICO. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to GEICO. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to GEICO and save. So as we get ready for the World Series, which begins tomorrow, Tiki, you know, we certainly doled out, and rightfully so, the praise and the props for the NBA, for the bubble, for what Adam Silver constructed, how the players handled their responsibilities. We did the same for Gary Bettman in the NHL. and the world champion, the champion, the Tampa Bay Lightning. We had their coach on, John Cooper, the other day. Mm-hmm. Great conversation. We did the same for the WNBA, lauded how they were able to get through the COVID situation and handle their professional responsibilities and not deviate from it, which would further, you know, really risk everything that the league had set up to avoid stoppages, pronounced stoppages. And you know what? While the World Series hasn't even seen a pitch yet, I don't think it's too premature to say that baseball, even though it's a short season, even though they had some very early flare-ups, as the Cardinals, as the Phillies, as a few other teams, the way baseball's been able to steamroll
mm-hmm.
into this and through this postseason has been pretty impressive.
Yeah, it has really been impressive. Well, once they went to like a quasi bubble, mm-hmm. We haven't seen any of the issues that we saw during the regular season, which makes sense because when you bubble, it keeps you from getting sick. And so, you know, good job by Major League Baseball. More importantly, the product has been interesting and it's been good and it's been dramatic. And, you know, a 3-1 comeback to, you know, force a game seven, a 3-0 comeback, or 0-3, I should say, the other way, and 1-3 and then 0-3 comebacks to force game sevens just made it dynamic. And the fact that they were playing every day made it hard. I can't imagine, like, the difficulty as a skip to manage that. To think about rotation setup, you know, because you got to play the next day and then the day after that and then the day after that and then managing your bullpen.
I think bullpen's probably tougher, by the way, in that situation.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, think about the situation that the Dodgers were in last night, having to start Dustin May. Not that they wanted to because what was he pitching on, like 3 days or four?
Three,
something like that. But and then not really making that decision until the midway through the day of a game that, you know.
Yeah, right after brunch.
It was crazy. So, like, but it worked. It worked out for him in a sense. As long as he didn't give up, you know, five or six runs, it works. But that challenge has made it, I think, more exciting than it otherwise would have been.
Well, you hit a money point here. Two comebacks, you know, two unique situations in both series.
Mm-hmm.
But even to get to a game seven, you know, a lot of times game seven is almost anticlimactic. You know, you build up all these storylines and you conjure all this energy and it's and then all of a sudden it's like a crooked number early on the board. Starting pitcher gets whacked, bullpen's in, it's 5-1, it's 7-2, it's 9-3, lights out. I mean, I know I'm just throwing scores out there, but that's just to illuminate that a lot of times, or maybe not a lot of times, but there are many occasions over the course of baseball history where Game 7 has been tough to watch because it's almost seemingly predetermined. I know mm-hmm. you haven't gotten the 27th out, but, you know, a lopsided score is that. And a lot of the fans that don't have an interest directly with their team, that's if they're not playing, probably going to go click and watch a little football. But you got two high energy and two high stress series. Saturday, you had a Game 7, mm-hmm. two-run game. Last night, you had Game 7, obviously. One-run game, dramatic home run. You know, Kershaw's getting the ball in game one. That's a storyline. I cannot wait to watch. I always say it like it was A-Rod or Bonds back in the day when they couldn't hit their way out of a paper bag in the playoffs. I'm gonna just believe that Kershaw eventually. Plus, I believe. I believe it'll be a little easier to navigate this Rays lineup. But the way Arozarena is swinging the bat right now, I don't know if I even. I don't even know if I believe that because the Rays, it neutralizes Choi. Zanino's a catcher who can still, you know, step on a fastball and hurt you, and that's a lefty-righty. Margot is a righty. You know, there's still going to be a lot of lefty-righty matchups here, mm-hmm. but it's time, Kershaw. I'm still defending you here, buddy, but there's an expiration on this defense. You got to put up a good game or two in the
World
Series,
man. Well, look, at the end of the day, you want the opportunities, and I think that's why I wasn't really rooting. It would have been fine either way with the Braves. As you know, I grew up a Braves fan simply because it was the only game on, only, you know, team that was playing on TBS, so I knew all those guys back in the day. Obviously, I come to New York, and that falls away. But so I have an affinity for the Braves. I think the storyline with Kershaw is just interesting. It's what you want to see. You want him to figure it out. You want him to have that moment that people have been waiting for, and he's been falling short in so many times in the postseason.
I'm looking at Arozarena's stats before. And there's a little delay with TV, so that's why I said before. 7 home runs in the postseason. I remember when Andrew Jones stepped in, he was just starting, he was 19 years old, Andrew Jones, Braves, ironically, just talking about them before too, And, you know, this was game one of the 96 World Series. There was a rainout on a Saturday night, got pushed back. Andy Pettit got lit up. I want to say the score was 11-1. It was just, it was so a lot. And then game two, which I went to, Yankees wound up losing, I want to say 4-1. Freddie McGriff hit a home run off the foul pole. Just didn't go right. Then, of course, they go to Atlanta. They win a couple of games. They come back. They win game six when there was a Marquise Grissom misplay the ball in center field, et cetera, et cetera. But I remember watching Andrew as a 19-year-old kid, and he was the youngest since Mickey Mantle to hit a home run in the World Series. You know, I'm feeling the Dodgers here. I'm leaning toward the Dodgers quite heavily. I really believe it's their time, but I just think they're, as much as I respect the Rays, they are just better. And I also believe that the Braves are more talented than the Rays, you know. So I'm kind of trying to incorporate that measurement. I think that this kid is, I don't know what he can become, but what he is right now is it's lunacy what he's doing to a baseball at this age.
Well,
I've never seen this.
Don't you get the benefit because he doesn't know any better? You know, so you say that about
kids.
Oh, I'm
not saying he's going to go 3-for-30.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
He's pitched, so I just don't know if they have enough around him to beat the Dodgers four times. But
yeah.
I expect him to step on a few and square a few up.
Yeah, he's not intimidated. Right? That's what I mean.
Intimidated.
That's what you say when you say, like, you don't know any better. You don't know to be scared of X, Y, or Z. You don't know.
Yeah.
The stage will be new to him. I know that a lot of people didn't want to see this match. I guess it didn't matter. As long as the Dodgers weren't in it, the matchup was going to be okay, I believe. The Rays, because of their skip, Kevin Cash, and how he manages his rotation and, you know, these odd ways in which he, you know, starts guys, starts relievers, and then, you know, he always has an answer in some regards. And then you start getting some, you know, good bats around him, like Rosarena, who you're just talking about. It makes for a good story because it feels like an underdog story, even though they were one of the best teams in the American League. And the Dodgers are the Dodgers. So they just have the benefit of the doubt because of their history, even though it's
pedigree.
Been a long, yeah, but it's been a long time
yep.
since they've won a World Series, even though they continually get here, which is why when we talked about this earlier, BT, Dave Roberts has the pressure. I mean, he's maybe the only one that has the pressure right now.
Oh,
Kershaw does too.
Well, I mean, Cash has nobody on the Rays, nobody even remotely involved with the Rays. They don't have an ounce of pressure. Now, they won't perceive it to be that way because they could conceivably never get back to the World Series. They went in 2008. They haven't been back since. They lost that year.
Yeah.
So, and they had a young team. David Price was a young buck. Longoria, third base. I mean, they had young players. You're like, oh, they'll be back. They're good. And never made it back. Although they've been a real thorn in our team's side now for a couple of years with the Yankees. With that monster disparity in payroll, they still find a way to really beat the Yankees. I think that it's a cute way to package it. I hear you. But we're missing out. And again, there's no disrespect to the Rays. But the Astros, you can make the case, they stole a World Series from the Dodgers. You know, going back to the cheating scandal a couple of years ago, you get to see this play. You would have been able to see this play out. And between, you know, the Dodger LA market, now that LeBron and that's all done, et cetera, you know, the Dodger market, West Coast market, you know, the Dodgers influence, even west of the Mississippi, because this goes back a long time ago before westward expansion in the late 60s with the Dodgers and the Giants. The team really that delineation was the Cardinals and even the Cubs a bit because their minor league team is in Iowa. Although I don't know if it was back then. But the point is there's going to be a large swath of Dodger fans. But if you had the Astros, boy, you would have had that negative, that hate energy.
Yeah.
You would have had a villain.
Yeah, yeah, right now you don't have a villain.
No, you don't. You don't have a villain. You have a little bit of a villainous characteristic in Minnesota, though, lately at the quarterback spot. Kirk Cousins, good God. Kirk, you like that? I don't like anything about these performances, Kirk. You look terrible, man. Kirk Cousins looks like he's the worst quarterback in football. He looks horrendous. We'll get to that coming up next. Do they actually have to bench him? Is that something the Vikings, because Zimmer's seat's getting a little hot. How do they salvage this? Minnesota Vikings are a mess, and we'll talk about that. Other items on the Inbounds Out of Bounds menu. That's after Bob Huesler's update, which is right now. Here's Bob. All right, Inbounds Out of Bounds coming up in a moment on this a pretty good Monday, man. Get ready for the Bills or the Chiefs. Looking forward to seeing that. I think the Chiefs kind of run away and maybe hide, if you know what I mean. But we'll see. Inbounds, out of bounds coming up, as I said. Time now, though, for Doing More, brought to you by the Home Depot. With help from the Home Depot, take on all fall projects without ever leaving your own backyard. Just download the Home Depot mobile app today to search, shop, and more. It's the Home Depot, how doers get more done. So the Hokies, Virginia Tech, were able to do really whatever they wanted on the ground Saturday against Boston College as they shredded the Eagles 40-14. The final, Hendon Hooker, Khalil Herbert, that's a great combo, over 300 yards on the ground, and Hooker found the end zone three times. So the Hokies are climbing a bit, number 19 in the country, and will look to keep moving next weekend as they take on Wake Forest. Didn't you guys play Wake Forest this weekend? Was it Wake?
Yeah. We lost bad.
It was ugly, right? I was surprised by that score.
Virginia's in an odd space, man. Nah. Took so many good steps last year in the ACC championship game as the Coastal winners, or no, the Atlantic winners. And now, I don't know. It's odd. I don't know, man. It's not fun watching them, that's for sure.
No, the few times I've seen them, they haven't looked great. I know Wake lost a few defensive players. I don't think they're anything special, so I was a little surprised at that score. But
yeah, so was I.
Hey, man. And by surprise, you mean not happy.
Yeah, like pissed. But
understood. All right, you ready for a little inbounds, out of bounds?
Yep, let's get it.
Let's go.
Anything can happen in sports and often does. What's right? What's wrong? And who's just crazy? We decide. Inbounds and out of bounds now. With Tiki and Tierney.
All right, not good. The Vikings got crushed by the Falcons. They got lit up. They gave up 40, and they lost by 17. 40-23. They were ghastly. 1-5 on the season. Ugh. And as we know, the Falcons picked up their first win of the season here, Tiki.
Yeah, Raheem.
That's right. Raheem Morris making some waves here.
That's right.
Now, Kirk Cousins threw three touchdowns, but he had three picks in the first half, including a pick on the first play of the game.
Ugh.
He now has 11 touchdowns and an NFL worst 10 picks through six games. Wow. And after the game was quite honest about whether or not he should maybe hit the bench if this keeps up.
You just have to play well, you know, in this business. And the reality is if the pace, you know, that I'm on in terms of the interceptions, if that were to continue, I won't finish the season. I won't, you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of, you know, you got to improve, whether it's them telling me, hey, we got to improve, or them pulling me. You got to get better, and that'll be what the rest of the season will be about for me.
I mean, it's impossible not to like this guy, but, you know, again, it's not the Sunday morning sermon. This is the NFL. You got to make plays, man. And he's made plays for him last year. They had a good year. They won a lot of games, playoffs, but
by the way, I hope they have been telling him he's got to play better. Like, are they not telling him?
You know, Zimmer's got his own issues on defense, too. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they're young on defense. I can understand that, but I can't understand how Kirk Cousins is playing this bad. Now, he's 32 years old. I mean, did he just fall off the face? I don't know.
Here's the question. Let's get into it. The Vikings and the rookie they took from LSU, who I loved, has been balling. So it's not like this, like,
Jefferson.
You don't have Stephon Diggs, but Jefferson. Jefferson's kind of filled the gap, you know, for Diggs for the most part. The Vikings should bench Cousins for backup Sean Mannion.
No, not a bad one.
The name alone says no, but let's get into this. Go ahead, interrupt.
Yeah, now you can't. One, it just doesn't make any sense. You're not moving on from Kirk Cousins this season or next season. You know, if you sit him down, what's it going to accomplish? Maybe help you win a little bit because of there's lack of mistakes, but Kirk Cousins is not a mistake maker. You know what I mean? His history doesn't tell me that this is how he should be playing, unless there's something physically going on. But I don't think it's that, because his second interception, BT, when he threw it, I'm forgetting who he was trying to target, but the linebacker was right in front of him, and it was like he was waiting for the linebacker to clear, even though the linebacker wasn't running nearly fast enough to clear where he wanted to throw the ball to. Instead, it's like he just threw it right to it. It was so bizarre. It's like, what are you looking at? What are you thinking? Like, what was your thought process that made you think that was a viable throw? That was, one, going to be completed, and more importantly, not be intercepted. So something's just off with him, and And you just got to trust he's going to figure it out. He's making $32 million for the next 2 years. There's no chance he's sitting down.
I'm with you. Out of bounds, only based on the circumstances, not necessarily based on the play. But even if he had a much more manageable price tag, I still wouldn't say bench him yet. Because Sean Mannion, I have no interest in watching Sean Mannion try to play football.
No.
Zero. You talk about what Kirk's making each year. That's the literal number. But then you got $62 million in dead money. You have $41 million in dead money. So when they extended that contract, a lot of it was to create some wiggle room for this year and last year by giving the extension and being able to spread things out. But that is inconsequential if the guy's not playing good football. It doesn't matter what you do with the finances when you throw into the wrong guy or the wrong team all the time. You got problems, and this team's in a bad place, but the backup is not nearly as interesting enough to even...
Or good.
Or good. Well, yeah, that's code for good. Interesting.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Like, it's not like he's young, and I'm like, well, who is he?
Yeah, right.
I think I know who Sean Mannion is, I think. And the Vikings are in a bad place. You know, Zimmer's seat is getting hotter by the week, and your quarterback's making a lot of money, and he's not an elevator right now. That is not a good combination.
Are you in or are you out?
Let's get to this. The Pats and the Broncos game, as we know, was postponed twice. Now, they finally met up yesterday. The Broncos won 18-12. McManus, six field goals, Brandon McManus, 18-12. Leading up to the game, the Pats were only allowed to practice once with one walkthrough as a result of multiple positive COVID tests. Now, predictably, Cam and the Pats' offense was flat, putting up less than 300 yards total offense. And after the game, Bill Belichick did not hide from why the team scuffled.
Well, it was a big challenge, you know, playing without guys, getting guys hurt, moving around, and some guys that, you know, haven't played together much, haven't practiced together much. So we need to get on the field. We need to practice. We need to develop some continuity as a team.
Okay, Teek. So Belichick never won for excuses. He's about accountability and doing your job. But, he certainly leads us down an interesting road there, something you and I could kick around. In or out? We do believe the Pats struggles more yesterday were more about lack of practice than a deeper issue with the offense.
Yeah, this is inbounds to me. I mean, this offense has been the same for years. It's just a different person at the helm. But when you make mistakes like, you know, catching a ball over the middle for a big gain and just fumbling it, not being accountable, that's just lack of getting hit. It's a lack of, you know, focusing on ball security because you have one walkthrough in 2 weeks. This is interesting because this seems to be the Patriots' kryptonite is not having the practice time to work on all the little things, all those little particulars that we'd always talk about with New England, the things that they do right, the situational football. When you're not in practice, you can't work on that stuff. And as a result, when it comes time to execute on game day, you look lost. Now, most of this was it wasn't anything that Denver did per se. I mean, in fact, they looked horrible themselves on offense with two interceptions and a fumble and no touchdowns. They found a way to be a little bit better than a struggling Patriots team. I think they'll rebound once this coronavirus spread clears them.
Yeah. I'm kind of in between here because they put up points against the Raiders.
Yep. I mean, the one underlying issue is they just don't have a ton of talent.
Yeah.
But that didn't stop them from starting the season as good as they did. You know
well,
what
because
I mean?
They at least had uninterrupted practices.
That's right. That's right.
You take average talent or slightly above average, and that might even be kind to their personnel. Let's say average talent, but you allow them to be coached up on a daily basis with Belichick looking over Josh Daniels' shoulder. They're going to be buttoned up, and they're going to be resourceful, and they'll come up with some things that nobody else really thinks about.
That's right.
And they'll piece something together. So yep. I'm going to say out of bounds, though, only for this reason. Because I still think that even though Cam, when he's been right, has looked explosive, I still need some more assurances that he's going to be okay for the rest of the season. He has had a few injuries. I don't mean COVID.
Yep.
He's had a few injuries the last couple of years. And he still has more of a penchant for throwing the ball to the other team. Not incredibly, but certainly more so than Tom Brady did and does. So you have that thin line of failure, that rate, where they just don't have great talent. And you can work around that if your quarterback throws five or six picks on the year. I think Cam's going to do more than that. And I think that downgrades a team that could win – probably more, you know, nine-ish. I didn't love him coming in. I don't love him now. So I'm going to say out of bounds. Circumstances certainly incorporated. But I'm just not a big Pats fan, this year, I should say. And I've been saying it since the summer.
Are you in or are you out?
So the ACC was finally starting to look like it could have been a contender. I tell you, it could have been a contender. Looking like a contender to push the SEC for college football supremacy.
No chance.
I hear you. With Clemson seemingly unstoppable and UNC was rolling. Notre Dame was looking pretty good. Both teams bolted inside the top five. However, the heavily favored Irish squeaked by Louisville. They were losing. It was 7-6 with 3.5 minutes to go in the third quarter in South Bend, which is scary. And then the Tar Heels fell to an underachieving, erratic Florida State team, 31-28, despite outgaining them by over 100 yards. In or out, you are more disappointed in the Irish's close win over Louisville than you are with the Tar Heels' loss to Florida State.
Yeah, I'm going to say Louisville because I saw Louisville play, and Malik Cunningham, their quarterback, he's a decent player, but he's not a game changer. He's not a difference maker, per se, at least not this season. He's not. So the fact that they really struggled and on the other side of the ball as well for Notre Dame is probably a bigger, you know, surprise to me. Florida State is interesting because we talked about Notre Dame earlier, BT. About North Carolina earlier and how they lost that game to Florida State. They changed quarterbacks. Remember the kid that I was telling you about at FSU, Jordan Travis?
Yeah.
Right? He's not a great thrower of the football, but the kid is a really good dual-purpose runner. Mm-hmm. And so they're able – North Carolina just wasn't prepared – for what they saw in Jordan Travis, a kid who rushed for 102 yards and two touchdowns and then threw for another one. So, like, they weren't ready for it. Maybe you can chalk it up to that. They shouldn't have lost this game like this because their offense is supposed to be explosive. But Notre Dame, I think it surprises me more. They looked anemic.
Okay, but I'm going to disagree, not with the look of being anemic. They were, as I said, 6 points, 3.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. You're home, give me a break. But I was more disappointed in UNC. Because, you know, listen, this is something Nick Foles was saying after the game this past weekend against Carolina. And Nick was actually kind of perturbed. He was angered. He said, hey, I'd rather win ugly than lose pretty any day of the week.
That's right.
And, you know, at the end of the day, Notre Dame gets a little check. They get a little W. There's still the zero on the right part of that column. We have four on the left and zero on the right.
Mm-hmm.
They're unblemished. They're not going to drop outside of the top five, whereas UNC certainly should, and that they will.
Yeah,
they have, and they deserve to. So, again, I'm not buying Notre Dame as a real threat to Clemson. I think they'll lose another game in addition to the Clemson game myself. But I've got to still respect the bottom line business of did you win or did you lose? And I'm going to respect the win there, even though it wasn't pretty. All right, Teak. The show's flying today, man. We got the Bills and Chiefs in 30 minutes.
I know.
Just about, right?
It's kind of crazy.
I love it.
I don't know if I like that or if I'm not going to like it.
Oh,
I think I'll like it. I think West Coast people might not like it.
I love it. I love it. We got Joel Klatt. Love this as well. College sports analyst for Fox. Get into all the stuff that we just did. Third hour coming up. Deep and Jerry.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.